On this episode of Still Loading, we all died of dysentery. Hello all, and welcome back for this new episode of Still Loading. For this week's episode, we're going to be talking about something I haven't really covered too much on the podcast so far, and that's PC games. For those who have listened to my show for a while now, you may remember that I did do an episode on the game Power Pete. Now, I don't even think that episode is on this RSS feed. It might be on my SoundCloud. But maybe I'll post it somewhere else. I'm thinking during some of the off weeks, and since you know I try to post every other week, sometimes I get more than that. But during some of the off weeks, I might try to post some of my old archive episodes from like 4 or 5 years ago, see what they even sound like, or better yet, just redo them. But I did an episode on a game called Power Pete, which is an awesome Macintosh game. But I haven't really, but to kind of tie that back in, I have never really gone into computer games or PC gaming specifically. And I felt, you know, maybe it's time for me to dive into that. So I wanted to talk about one of the most important series in all of PC gaming, and if you couldn't tell by the title, it is the Oregon Trail. So any kid that grew up in the 80s and 90s and loved video games almost always was given some type of edutainment game by their parents, or played an edutainment game in school. You know, the games that try to teach you something. And as with any new medium, there's always something created within it in an effort to make it more educational. Books, you know, can be fiction or nonfiction. Movies can be drama or documentary. Music can be fun and innocuous or serious and poignant. Maybe music doesn't really have the greatest parallel, but video games are no different. And one of the game series that is most synonymous with edutainment would have to be the Oregon Trail series. Kids who grew up with the series most likely have fond, or maybe not so fond, memories of it. I personally played Oregon Trail 2, so I missed out on the first game in the series, and I haven't really played many other entries into the series since 2, but this week's episode, I really wanted to take a deep dive, at least into the first couple entries, maybe the first 2 of the series, and explore why it's such an important part of video game history. But to do that, let's go back to the beginning. The Oregon Trail was developed in 1971 by Don Rawich, Bill Heineman, and Paul Dillenberger. They were 3 Minnesotan public school teachers, and at the time, computers were brand new, so there were very few, if any, in the majority of public schools. So new, in fact, that the original game wasn't even played on a computer monitor. It was, in fact, played on a teletypewriter, or teletype for short. Teletypes were electromechanical typewriters that were connected via phone line to a large mainframe computer. The game was literally a text-based paper game. Students would type out their commands on a roll of paper, and the computer would respond by typing back status updates. All 3 of them went to school at Carleton College in Minnesota, and during the fall semester of their senior year, they all roomed together for their student teaching in Minneapolis. Don Rawich was assigned to teaching 8th grade U.S. history, and specifically the Westward Movement. He wanted to find a more interesting way to relay the information to the children, and so he started experimenting with making a board game with a massive map of the Western United States. However, turning it into a computer game was pretty much the last thing on his mind, as he had no experience in computer programming. However, his 2 roommates, Bill Heineman and Paul Dillenberger, did have some computer programming experience. Bill had taken a 5-week programming course the previous year and was recruited later on to be a lab assistant and help out the students also taking that course. He was fascinated by computers and how they could interact with users. He started thinking about writing a program that could interact with a human through language, but was drawing a blank on what kind of program it could be. Heineman came home from teaching one afternoon in November and saw Don working on game cards of various situations that could occur within the game. This gave him the spark that he needed to create his interactive computer program. Paul Dillenberger later came home and saw Bill and Don working on this game, and Paul was also a programmer, like I said before. So Bill asked him, "Do you think we could put this on a computer?" He would then elaborate further and say, "This would be a perfect application for a computer. Instead of shaking a dice to determine how far you went, the program could take into consideration how much you spent on your oxen and your wagon and how much of a load you were carrying." After hearing all this, Don replied, "Well, that sounds great, but I kind of need this by next Friday." Don had already spent almost 2 weeks planning out the board game, leaving Bill and Paul a little over a week to actually put it on the computer. Thankfully, they said they could finish it on time, and over the course of a couple late nights and missed meals, they were able to put the game together in time. In the first version of the game, they used probabilities in conjunction with geography to dictate the various factors within the game. For example, what that actually means is that the player was more likely to experience cold weather in the mountains of Wyoming and Oregon than in other places. Like I said, they would use the geography of the map, and that would determine the probability of various events. And they designed the game with many options for the players to choose from. How fast or slow they progress, if they stopped at a fort, how much food the characters ate, etc. The way they programmed hunting into the game was also pretty interesting. When the player would go hunting, they would have to type in the word bang. As fast as they can, and the more accurate and quickly they typed it, the more meat they got from hunting. The slower and less accurate, the less it would yield. They also used this type of gameplay for wild animal attacks or bandit attacks, and when the player died, they would have options like, do you want a gravestone, or do you want a priest, or things like that. Before the game was shown to Don's class, Paul and Bill tested it out on their students first, and the results were much better than they could have hoped for. The teletype was in a closet, and the students would gather around to see what responses were being typed out from the computer. Some would come in early and stay late so they could play the game. And while the game was a hit with the students, the faculty did not have as positive a response. One of the notable early revisions of the game was taking out any negative references to Native Americans. The designers had grown up in a world of cowboys and Indians, but realized quickly if anyone of Native American descent played the game, they'd be fighting against themselves in a sense. So the designers changed some terminology. For example, instead of having Indians ahead, they would change it to bandits ahead, or wild animals ahead, etc. After playtesting, the big debut for Don was ready to happen. Don taught 3 classes a day with 25 students, so he had to work up a schedule. The school only had the 1 teletype, so he had to reserve it for an entire week and have the students rotate between a selection of activities, one of them being the game itself. What was interesting is that the students actually organized themselves within the groups they were assigned. When groups were playing, they would figure out which student would be the best typist or, you know, person with the best typing skills, and they would be designated to be on the computer. Others would keep track of the map and the progress that the party was going on out west. Another student would keep track of supplies, etc. And remember, there was no computer monitor for this game. It was all on paper. At the end of the week, the creators printed out the source code for the game and deleted the files off the computer. 3 years later, Don ended up working at the Minnesota Educational Computing Consortium, or MECC slash, or for my purposes, MEC for short. He still had the source code, so he added it to the MEC system, which served multiple schools across the state. And MEC was originally a non-profit company. However, in 1983, it was bought and it became a for-profit company. The game started selling well for them, and unfortunately, since it was added before the company became a profit company or for-profit, none of the creators were credited, and they didn't really receive any royalties for it. Thankfully, in the 90s, during an anniversary event, MEC finally credited the 3 men for their creation. But we're not done yet. Let's talk about the game itself and the series. Most people are familiar with the 1985 release of the original game. Most, you know, like I said, except for me. I started with Oregon Trail too. But in any case, the game begins with you choosing what kind of profession you want to start as. You can choose between a banker, a carpenter, a farmer, or pretty much just those 3. These served as difficulty levels. The banker was the easiest level because it gave you the most money to start with so you could afford to buy more things for your travels. The most difficult one was the farmer, which gave you the least amount of money. After choosing your profession, you would then enter your characters' names, and this was where the classic moments of naming all your characters after your friends would come in. And then you would always see how far, you know, Johnny could make it, or Josie survived. But after you picked all your names out, you would have to choose the month in which you were starting the trip. And it was a tough challenge to balance. The earlier months generally made it a little bit more difficult for you because you were still kind of like you could start in March or something like that, and you're still feeling the effects of winter. It was still cold. However, it gave you a lot of time to get to Oregon before winter set in, you know, in December or something like that. But if you started later, you would have an easier beginning, but you would more likely run into winter depending on how fast or slow you were getting there. And once you choose your departure date, then you have to buy supplies. You know, would you buy what, you know, what size wagon are you going to buy? How much food are you going to bring? What kind of clothes are you going to buy for all your party members? Things like that. And once you've chosen everything, you're ready to begin your adventure. And along the way, you're going to encounter various hazards and events like crossing rivers, running into bandits. You'll find forts along the way that you can restock your supplies, things like that. And that's pretty much the gist of the game. I mean, in terms of actual gameplay, there's not much more else to do. You could, like I said, you could hunt along the trip, and you pretty much would react to the events that the game would feed you and the different probabilities and whatnot. And what most people finally, at least now, and to kind of get into the nostalgia part of it, for me at least, I always remember this game because, like I said, I played two, and the second one, what stuck out to me the most was the weird cutscenes. You have these weird, like, live action but pre-rendered at the same time cutscenes that you would watch, and so all the villagers and townspeople felt more alive to you. It had some interesting, it actually had music and voice acting, and it just felt very immersive. And after watching the original game, it was very different from what my experience was. But what kind of stays the same across the board is while the experience is different, it still feels like the same game. Like they upgraded enough where it felt like a different game, but at the same time, it kept that Oregon Trail experience. And what is that experience? Like I said, we all died of dysentery. All the weird stuff that can happen along the way, all the weird things the computer decides to do to the player as they're trying to make their way to Oregon. There's always interesting events that you don't really expect to happen. One of my friends, who I don't think he even listened to the podcast, but my friend John, he would always tell us about the weirdest stuff he would try in Oregon Trail. I remember the one, and this still makes me laugh. He started pretty early, like, you know, the departure date for the travelers. But what he did was it was amazing. He bought the biggest wagon he could. He filled it with nothing but meat. Didn't buy any special clothes for his travelers, for any of the settlers or anything like that, filled it with nothing but meat and a barrel of pickles and sent them on their way. They survived. I still don't know how that happened because I barely survived any of those games. I think I didn't play on easy when I was a kid, but it's over 20 plus years ago, so it's been a while since I've played anything like that, or since I've even played the game. I know. So what is so endearing about the series as a whole is just all the memories that people have of it, because it's one of those things, it developed a community around it, and kind of like how online games are now, where, like, you know, if you ever played World of Warcraft, you remember the weird experiences that you had with your guildmates or friends as you were playing online that you can only really describe if you were there. And it's the same thing in Oregon Trail. Granted, it's not multiplayer and you're not playing with other people, but you have these party members and weird shit happens and you don't really know how to describe it to people who are not playing the game either, who aren't playing the game. If they're playing it at the same time, they understand a little bit better, but that's the same thing. You know, it's like you had to be there type of thing. It's an inside joke, but with you and those computer players. And that's what's so interesting about the game. It kind of develops a relationship between you and the fictional settlers that you named. I think you naming them definitely helps, because whether you're comparing them to your friends or whatnot, but it allows a cool level of immersion that makes you feel like you're really traveling across the country. And that's why I think is so cool about the Oregon Trail games. Now, I only really played the first one. I only really talked about the first one here. And one of the things I wanted to also bring up is just that I thought was cool is that there's a lot of sequels to this game. Besides Oregon Trail 1 and 2, there's a lot of spinoffs like the Amazon Trail and the Yukon Trail. And there's a lot of just different games that pick different trails for you to explore. So it was an interesting time in gaming because they released one a couple years ago, and now I think you can actually get it on PC, or sorry, your phone. And actually something really recent, and I literally, it should be coming in the mail tomorrow, but the day I'm recording this, I found on Amazon, it's on sale right now for $10, but it might be $30 by the time this episode posts. It was a handheld Oregon Trail. Like it was an old, it looks like the green monitors from the 80s, like it's an old version. It's the original version of the Oregon Trail, but you can play it on the go. And it's just this little handheld Oregon Trail that you can take with you. And it was only $10, so I picked it up. I'm excited to try it out and see what the old one was like, because I remember this the Oregon Trail too, like I said, with all the amazing voice acting and cutscenes, just, you know, spot on. But in any case, that should wrap up what I have to say about the game. Thank you all once again for listening. And before I kind of do my sign off, do you guys have any experiences with the Oregon Trail series? And if so, let me know. Tell me what they were. I'd love to hear them. I'd love to hear what, because that's what, like I said, the best part about Oregon Trail is like everyone has a different story. And if you played the series, it makes it that much more entertaining to hear them. So I'd love to hear from you guys. If you played Oregon Trail, what happened? What were some of your fondest memories of it? Or maybe not so fond. So in any case, if you want to do that or just talk to me in general, you can reach out to me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. You can also email me at StillLoadingContact@gmail.com. Feel free to reach out to me on any of those in any of those places. A couple quick shout-outs. The whole Podbeard Network, which I am now a part of. Also, No Geeks Allowed, that's KNOW, the No Geeks Allowed podcast. Great friends, they were on my last episode for GoldenEye. Also, my friend Erica over the Apex and the Abyss. I butchered that the first time. Fantastic True Crime Podcast. Christian and Damon's Amazing Nerd Show. Drinks with Larry. My buddy Josh, whose name is also Josh, over at Firespin Gaming on YouTube. Definitely check him out. And just everyone who's supported me. The Untrained Eye has been super nice to me lately. I've actually really been enjoying their podcast. Definitely give them a listen. They kind of talk about topical things, or they talk about like current topics and, you know, the current news essentially. But definitely give them a listen. They're really funny. They have a really fun take on just news in general. And that should be about it. I know I'm forgetting someone, so I'm sorry. There's just too many shout outs now. And I don't want to spend the last like 15 minutes of the episode just giving shout outs consistently. So yep, that should wrap it all up. Once again, follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at StillLoadingPod, or email me at StillLoadingContact@gmail.com. And last thing I'll say before I sign off, 100th episode next week, and I'm working on getting some guests for it. It should be a good one. If you have any questions, I don't know if anyone will have any questions for it, but I will include a Q&A segment in it at either the beginning or the end. But please show up for it. Send some questions my way if you have any. I'd love just anything you can think of. If you ever had any questions for me, send them my way. And that's it. So have a good one, everyone, and I will see you next time.